If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we are back in the studio for literally the first time in 2 years. Phil, you and I were here 2 years ago for the very first editions of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, and then something called COVID came along.
Yeah, it did. And this environment's far better when you're doing this sort of recording because we can see everybody. You can see bodily reactions. You can see pupils dilating. We can read the room a bit better. Whereas when we do this stuff remotely, it is more difficult. So I'm really pleased that we're back. And I don't think when we recorded that first one a couple of years ago, Tim, we realised that probably that was the first one and last one we're going to be recording for almost 2 years. So yeah, amazing to be back and also here in the studio with our guest today.
Absolutely. Well, let's get on to those guests. We've got some wonderful people around the table. Let's go left to right, starting with the lady in the beautiful dress sat next to me.
I'm Daisy Barnes and I ride for Brother UK Orientation Marketing.
And then the gentleman in the rather fetching pale blue team t-shirt.
Hi, I'm Ian Watson. I'm a team manager for Team Brother UK LDN.
And then the gentleman very much on brand in the Brother branded polo shirt.
Tony Barry. I look after neutral service in all the races, hopefully.
I'm glad the cameras aren't on today, Tim, because you and I are the two people who are not branded today. And I'm super delighted that all of our teams have come in their T-shirts. And I've got a T-shirt today, but I think I'm not going to fit in it, Ian, after my lockdown weight. I'm still trying to knock it off.
Well, the guests are certainly showing us the way today. Let's start with the National Road and Time Trial Championship. Some amazing races, some brilliant winners. And in my opinion, at least, the domestic riders more than held their own against World Tour opposition. Where to begin, Daisy? We should begin with you, really, because you were there, you rode it, you rode the time trial, you took part in the road race. You seem to have dried out a little bit since then.
Yeah, very, very wet, very wet. I'll start with the time trial. It's actually a lovely day. I actually got a bit of sunburn. I know it's hard to believe in Scotland, but it was lovely. It was a really good course, actually. I wouldn't say it was rolling or hilly. It was grippy, like the roads felt grippy and you had to be sort of on the pedals all the time. Not technical, a few like corners, but nothing you just had to sort of come off your extensions or anything for. So yeah, it was a really good course. It felt quite fast to ride, actually. I was really pleased with the sort of speed you could carry, even up sort of the little climbs, you could carry your speed over them. So no, it was really good. I think for the results, it's really nice to see, obviously, the World Tour riders coming through on the podium, but I think from a domestic level, obviously Lucy Gadd getting the third spot on the podium was really good to see. And she's had a really good season. So it was good to see her sort of finish off at Nationals and a very deserving podium spot. The road race was really, really, really damp.
Yeah. Damp? Biblical.
I think like any other day, it would be literally like a storm. And you know what the worst, in the car on the way up, my mum said, oh, don't worry, it's a southerly wind. It'll be warm. I promise you, it was not warm. There was not one bit of it that was warm. I left like my race cape on in the start. Like, it was just so wet and my gloves were just like turning into like a sponge. And as we ran along, I just kept squeezing water out of them. All I could think of when I was riding, like a few years ago, we'd done the Pimbo Road Race in really similar conditions. And Becky and I have said ever since it will never be as bad as that, but it was worse. So I definitely don't think I want to ride those conditions again because it was really wet. And then to make it almost worse, the men had a really nice afternoon. It sort of dried up and I was watching it, like obviously on the live stream thinking, oh, what a lovely afternoon for them. So obviously that really shook it up. But I think ultimately the result, the way it's gone is very similar to last year at Lincoln. You've got that breakaway of the World Tour riders. Obviously it didn't form quite in the same way this year. I feel like they had to sort of fight for it a little bit more. Obviously, Christina out the front for a couple of hours. So very standout performance from her. Obviously, Sammy getting up there as well. And then Alice Towers off the front was really nice. She's never won a road race, she said. So to win a national championship, really, really good. I think then after that, we've got to look sort of beyond the World Tour riders and just see how well some of the domestic riders did. Because actually, to get into that top 20, top 15 at a national championships as a domestic rider is super impressive.
Wonderful, wonderful racing from start to finish. Ian, you would have been there as well, of course, in the capacity of team manager for Brother UK LDN. What insights can you give us from that brutally attritional road race?
It was absolutely brutal. Yeah, because you get rain in summer and you can see summer rain, but it really wasn't summer rain, was it? It was like middle of winter. It was cold and it was horrible, but everyone was in the same boat. And it was a really, really good race. As you said, did form that breakaway in the end with what you call the usual suspects. But what I was really impressed with the race was that break went so late, went so late into the race. And the domestic riders, like you call the domestic riders from teams like ourselves, were there in the thick of the action race until the very end, you know, whereas in previous editions, the professional riders would have had it much more their own way. So I think it was a fantastic race for that point of view. The bunch stayed together for quite a long time in what was a hard race in hard conditions. It wasn't just the rain, it was the wind as well. We was having 40 mile an hour gusts, and it was a long straight up to the feed zone, and that was a block headwind all the way up there, wasn't it? And it was a tough old race, and everybody stepped up into the conditions, and I thought it was a fantastic race. Yeah,
what extra motivation, morale, determination does the national championships provide? Is it kind of like your FA Cup final?
A bit. I think there's always a little bit of you that's sort of like dead chuffed to be there, and to know that, like, on a good day, you are good enough to be, like, you're racing it. And I think that's one of the things that, especially this year, me, it's sort of to enter a race and have the attitude of, like, I don't just want to get round, I want to be part of it, I want to be in the action. And to be in the action, as you look to your right and you've got Anna Henderson next to you, like, that's a bit different. And I don't think you get that at other rounds of the national series, because they're off doing their own thing and we're all doing our own thing. So actually, and you're suddenly following somebody's wheel, or Fire for Georgie's in front of you, and you sort of look and you think, oh, I'm doing all right because I'm surrounded by these people, and it's a little bit of a boost to yourself. You just think I'm doing all right. So yeah, there's definitely that bit of extra motivation. And yeah, like it's raced differently though as well, isn't it? Because everyone's there for themselves a lot more rather than the team. So I think it is raced differently, and that's quite motivating.
I think that's what also makes it great to watch as a viewer, because the dynamics of the race are so different. Like you say, the brakes forming and all that kind of stuff. And literally, it's not quite a free-for-all, but it's totally raced differently in a very, very good way, that everyone's got an opportunity, really, in reality. Because for once, some of these World Tour riders have only got one or two of them, perhaps, on the road. And there were some domestic teams actually lining up with six or eight riders in the starting lineup. So if they had a favoured rider, then actually they could work for them to some degree and sort of put them in the best possible position. The other thing I thought was interesting about the race, particularly the women's race, that actually of the number of starters, there was 126 riders started and 53 finished. And I think that says everything about the conditions on the day, that actually they were brutal, really, really difficult. And I actually went out on the bike the day before in some of those winds, just doing my sort of miles around Cheshire. And I thought, holy smoke, I was absolutely broken when I got home. And how the males and the females raced in those conditions. And I think the females got the worst of it, without a doubt, the wind and the wet. And I literally just tipped my hat to anybody that went up on that line on that day and rode off and begun that nationals. It was quite something. It must have been like a psychological battle, just even on the line, because you're cold and you've got, obviously, there's some riders there have got reputations for riding well in poor conditions, some who don't go well in poor conditions and prefer it warmer. So kind of even the race, I'm sure, was already started before you'd even rolled a meter off the start line.
Oh yeah, definitely. I remember chatting to Sian from Brother London, and she said, it's okay, like I'm all right in the rain. And she said, I know that, and I know that other people aren't. I'm already a bit there, like I'll be all right. And I said to you last year after Lincoln, because it was raining, I said, oh, it's all right, I'm all right in the rain, I'm from Cumbria, I'll be fine. So I think there's always a little bit of it. And I know, like, some of the Scottish riders said, oh, it's fine, like this is what it's like in Scotland quite a lot. So yeah, there's definitely that element to it, because we're all standing in the car park, and so a lot of people probably didn't even start, you know, they just said, you know what, it's not the day for me, not worth it. It's not worth the risk of crashing, or, you know, you could just get really cold. So yeah, I think a lot of people were definitely defeated before they stood on the start line.
And maybe that makes Alice Towers' result even more impressive. I mean, 19 years old, winning her first ever elite road race, taking the national senior title and the junior title in amongst a World Tour field in those conditions. You add all of those things up and go, now that was a very, very impressive ride. Absolutely incredible.
100%. I mean, talk about earning the national jersey. She, you know, she's earned every day in those stripes. Tony, be good to get your insights too. I mean, you're there as a neutral service provider.
Winner was unbelievable because we were with the chasing group of, I think it was about six riders, and they weren't messing around. They were going for her. And we even said in the car, she could get caught here. But she'd done a super ride. There's no taking it away from her. That was a cracking ride. And especially with her being under 23. She is a real talent for the future. Definitely for Brewer.
We need to get Alice on a Brother UK sponsored team. Just on the mechanical side, Tony, were there more incidents, more punctures because of wet roads?
We were expecting that because normally when it rains, the flints come up and we expect more punctures. But as it was, it wasn't too bad. And crashes. Normally there's crashes in that sort of weather. And I think there was only a couple and all of them got up and continued. So there was no major incident with that sort of where you can say a crashed or a punctured. There was less of that than normal. It was similar in some ways to Lincoln. Last year we had the Nationals down at Lincoln and it was the opposite way round. The men's race was terrible in Lincoln. It was just like the women's race in Scotland in vertical rain and everything that you could say was bad for riding the bike. But that's what makes bike riders.
This is a different breed, Phil, isn't it? These are tough competitors.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think what's interesting to me is that the Nationals, there's three vehicles on the Nationals, Tony, right, isn't there, on the neutral side? We normally take two along to the National Road Series. So we had a third vehicle there, effectively. And one thing that we were talking about, I was having a conversation with somebody on Twitter about, was actually positioning of the vehicles, because I watched both races, every mile of both races, sofa surfing at home. You know, it was fantastic. And I was also watching where the vehicles were being positioned all the time. You know, your neutral vehicles, you were moving up and around a lot. And I was explaining to somebody that part of that is your insight, but ultimately you are directed by the chief comm and the commissaires on the road. So sometimes people wonder why the vehicle is where it is. It sometimes could be ahead of the race. Sometimes it could be right behind, you know, the lead breakaway group. Sometimes in the middle of the bunch behind the convoy. How busy was the chief comm to you on the mic during the race?
It was quite funny, really, because both events were done by different UCI commissaires. And in the first race, what the commissaire wanted was two out front and one behind. In the second race, which was the men's race, Dave, who was the commissaire on that one, wanted two behind and one out front. So it was the opposite. I think the best one is two out front because you can always pull them back, but it's difficult to send somebody forward, especially with the way the pelotons go in. You know, you have a, it just makes it a little bit more difficult to get through. We do get through, but I think that's the worst part of the bike racing is trying to go past a peloton that is big. And if it's moving, it's just like a line. It's quite easy to get caught in the middle. I'm sure you have that, Ian, with when you want to go forward. I know I prefer not to do that. I would prefer to go out front and be pulled back. But in the second race, the guy wanted us out front, so we had to send another one up out front because it depends how the race goes.
I think as a spectator, I mean, you know, what do I know? Just watching the live stream, but hearing what you've just said, to me, that seemed like the right call. I remember watching you slot in behind the breakaway, which was the definitive break at that stage, wasn't it? It was Cavendish, Watson, Richardson, Turner, Ben Turner, who later got dropped. But I remember watching you smoothly pull off the side of the road in behind that leading quartet. And that by itself felt like, well, okay, this is the quartet that's going to the line.
It was quite funny, really. An item that happened with us early on, we had to change a bike because the rider whose bike had punctured both the front and rear. And what we did was we gave him one of our bikes and put his bike on the roof. And as the race progressed, we eventually ended up behind the leading group, which was the four riders. They dropped one and we went past him. So we were behind the three leading riders. When we went over the line, we got fourth because we had his bike on the roof rack. So his transponder registered that we got fourth. So we were quite happy with that.
Now, Tony, wouldn't that have been funny if you'd have podiumed? You know, if it was side given, there's two away, brothers on the pod. Tony Barry goes up, takes the medal. Oh, it's wonderful. Would have been a glittering moment in your career, Tony.
It would. We couldn't get past them, though.
This is where the sponsorship money goes, Phil, isn't it? Trying to get trying to get Tony on the podium.
But Tony, it also reminds me that, you know, from a technical point of view, the Nationals is a complicated race for neutral service. It is, because you've got the World Tour riders coming to the UK. We've got all manner of group sets and gear ratios. And of course, some of the riders actually on rim brakes as well as disc brakes. So the variety of kit that we've got to kind of carry, particularly the wheels in the vehicles, I think is I'm thinking back to the Tour of Britain, is probably as complicated as the Tour of Britain in terms of the inventory in the vehicles.
I think it's more difficult than the Tour of Britain, because the Tour of Britain, they all have a team car, whereas in the Nationals, there is riders that don't have team cars, or like the Tour of Britain, you have two team cars, whereas we only have one in the Nationals. So the team car could be up with the brake and still got five riders in the peloton. And a lot of them, some of the teams, don't have the same bikes. So we more or less have to deal with the 11 speeders and also the 12 speed Campag, Shimano, and then we move on to discs. Then a lot of riders ride 160 discs on the front, some ride 140, and you've got the same on the back end. Forget about rim brakes. There is people with rim brakes, but when we were on that, it was easy.
Yeah, much, much easier. Well, I was certainly noticing that when John Archibald was pushing and active in the race, I saw John was racing on rim brakes. I thought, well, I'm sure we've got one on the roof somewhere. But I think if this carries on, we're going to have a trailer behind the vehicle, Tony, with even more wheels on the back. But certainly, from what I could see on the TV, you don't always see everything, but the vehicles didn't look super busy in terms of the having to deal with the technical interventions at the side of the road. So was that your experience?
Yeah, it wasn't. We were expecting it to be worse than what it was, both the female and the male race, but it just didn't seem to be the problems what we encounter.
And how was the race radio on the day, Tony? Was the race radio busy?
Well, we have two radios in the car, one which is the Commissaire's channel, and then there's also Radio Tour. Normally on the Commissaire's channel, they'll discuss it and say, this rider is punctured, and then it'll come through on Radio Tour. So we get it twice. And also on the Commissaire's channel, they will call us up, which has no bearing on what is happening on Radio Tour. Radio Tour is for all the teams, and that keeps them informed. Whereas if with the Commissaire's channel, we'll get pulled in on things that are happening there.
Because I remember that sometimes a rider can feel frustrated that there isn't a neutral service vehicle close to them, but actually it's not down to neutral service to decide that. It's down to the commissaires to decide where they want you fundamentally in the race. So if you're called ahead fundamentally and an accident's happening way behind, sometimes it can just lead to a rider feeling frustrated, but ultimately it's not for them to come and knock at your door, it's to come and knock at the door of the commissaires of the race.
One of the things that does get us, and it's all the time, is if we service a rider, the rider will expect us or ask us, will you pace me back on? A lot of riders haven't got the strength to do that, so we would be stuck back for a long while, out of the race, out of the ones that possibly could be winning. And what normally happens is, Commissaire Four, who is at the back, he will give the rider the benefit of the doubt and let him see whether he can hang on to us, or not hang on, I shouldn't say that, ride behind us. And he will then say, we've had enough, go forward. So we normally tell the rider, I'm sorry, we can't stay with you any longer, we're going to have to go forward. And you can see on the face of the riders how disappointed they are, because if they're well off, the race is over.
I think, you know, the race convoy, that's the bit that television just doesn't get. I thought the coverage of the Nationals was okay. There wasn't enough information on the screen for me just watching as a fan, and not enough motorbikes either, I didn't think. But generally, you know, what we get on GCN, really good coverage, but it doesn't come close to telling the story, the convoy, which is the race within the race, until you've been in that team car, until you've been in that neutral service car. You've got absolutely no idea how fast, how dangerous, how competitive, how close the vehicles are to the riders, how everything relies, I think, on that sixth sense that people driving the cars, almost without exception, have been riders. And, you know, they know the drill. How about you, Ian? You know, coming back to that National Women's Road Race, filthy conditions. You're driving a car and you're trying to keep soaking wet riders motivated. How on earth do you go about that?
We don't speak to them too much in the car because I'd rather them stay in the bunch. And because what's different, you might see in the Tour de France and things like that where they're dropping back to the car a lot. They're on these nice big wide roads and going for them. But we're racing on little country lanes in the north of England. And getting up to the bunch and back is difficult. I mean, we had one instance, one of my riders broke a shoe plate and called for the service and it's coming over the radio, LDN, LDN. And I can't go anywhere. We're right to, you know, we're going down these tiny narrow lanes and it's downhill and eventually we do get to it. But it's absolute white knuckle when you're going through. So you're going past the other team cars, you're going past other riders to get down to your rider. So it's a very, very, very tough job and very nerve-wracking at the best of times. So a lot of time you're in the convoy and you're dawdling along and nothing's happening and it's a nice little jaunt in the countryside. But then when you're needed, aren't you? It's a tough job, yeah.
Taking your point, I'm glad the TV cameras aren't there.
Yeah.
Because some of the things that go on in that convoy, you're better off not seeing. You know, I mean, the commissaires have their work cut out. I mean, if I was a team manager, I would look after my team and do whatever I can to get them up back into the peloton or whatever it is, but they do things that are not right. Let's put it that way.
So you're a commissaire as well, aren't you? So you are often commissaire of a race yourself. So you've got both sides that you can see. So you've got this sort of slightly independent view in neutral service, but equally there are times when you're the commissaire of a race when you're seeing and hearing some of these things going on and then having to create a barrage and do all these things to make sure the race remains fair for everybody competing.
It is. And I remember when I used to go away with GB teams, you put a different hat on. You're looking after your 8 riders. Forget about everybody else. I've got to get that rider back into the peloton. And it's a different hat every time. Thankfully, people don't see that.
Let's talk about the courses. Daisy, earlier you mentioned Lincoln, and I didn't think this year could possibly live up to Lincoln, which is arguably the best race on the domestic calendar anyway. But it came pretty close, I thought. The men's race was absolutely sensational. The women's race, of course, heavily affected by the rain, but turned into its own war of attrition. And I thought in both races, the course did a good deal to create exciting and attractive racing. Daisy, how was it from the saddle?
See, I love Lincoln. This is a thing. I love Lincoln. I think I'd love Lincoln more than that course at the weekend. I don't think it would have been a different outcome if it hadn't rained. I think the rain sort of made it. I don't think it would have been, like you say, a war of attrition. It was a nice course, but like there wasn't like a significant climb and it was like nice country lanes, like you say, but yeah, like Lincoln's something else, isn't it? I don't think we can compare at all. I think the atmosphere and everything was still really good. It was a good course. It was rolling. There was a quick descent in it, a few corners, a little bit technical.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think what I liked about the course in comparison to some others is that it had a little bit of everything. So there was no signature hill or anything like that, which was good. So it was fairly rolling. And then with the winds, it just made for good racing. And that's what you saw, you know. But it meant that the groups could stay together a bit more. And with the winds, you had to use your head a bit more about where you ride and where you tack from, where you don't. And that's what made it good racing. I think chapeau to the course. I think it was well thought out. On paper, when you did the recce, you think, well, this isn't too bad. You know, that was a view from the riders. I was only sitting in the car. But yeah, it wasn't too bad. But I think on the day, with the conditions, without the conditions and just racing at race pace, it was a great, great course.
Did you get the award for the furthest travelled on a motorway to get to Castle Douglas? Would come from London, wouldn't you? What's that, 5 or 6 hours?
Dave from Bianchi comes over from Exeter. He does a lot more management. But then, yeah, St Pirin, yeah, you have Ricky and Jenny. I think they're on their house a couple of days a year, I think. They're on the road all the time, yeah.
You know, going back to where we just said then, what makes a hard race? The riders make the race. Yeah, you can put a pan flat course in, like people talk Stockton is flat. That's the hardest circuit to ride. If those riders want to race, you've got a job on that day.
It's true. Yeah.
And when the Nationals was there, when Adam Blythe won it, everybody was saying it's going to be an easy Nationals. It wasn't. They were doing 35 most of the time. And if you are a worthy winner, if you can hang on to that, okay, you can have the climbs over the trough and all that lot, but if the riders make the race.
100%. Yeah, I mean, we see that in the World Tour, don't we? There's this ongoing debate about long mountain stages, for example, and actually the two best stages of the Giro this year were those two circuit stages. I mean, when do you ever see a circuit in a Grand Tour? And yet They were amazing stages, and you're absolutely right. You can make these ludicrously hard courses, but as you rightly say, Tony, it's the riders who decide how it's raced. Let's talk about the course for the Criterium race now, because we've barely discussed the crit, and that was absolutely brilliant. And of course, we were all enthralled by the Tour Series. We were hooked on that because brothers' teams are in it, and it was great racing this year. And I thought the women's race, Ian, you'll be able to give me a proper insight here. I thought it was sort of very similar to some of the rounds that we'd seen in the Tour Series. Pro Noctis, Cams Basso, Emma Jeffers, you know, all the protagonists from the Tour Series were front and centre in the national crit race.
But I thought it was a proper crit course, to be honest with you. I like it. I mean, I love a good hairpin. I think a hairpin's like your hill, isn't it? You know, you've got to go into it right. You've got to get your gearing right. And it's about the exit rather than the get around it, you know. And that's what it showed, you know. And that becomes really traditional, which it did in that race as well. And the riders just raced it from the gun and raced it fast, and it made it an exciting race. And yeah, I thought it was fantastic, yeah. Yeah, and a thrilling finish as well, but a bit of argy-bargy, but that's what you're going to get, you know, in that kind of course. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, the men's race, Phil, you tipped Matt Bostock. You'd seen him live and direct at Manchester from close quarters, and that prediction turned out to be accurate. He looked the full package, didn't he?
Yeah, Matt Bostock, if you've been following the Tour Series, just looked strong in every race. He's clearly hit a great vein of form. And actually, I think he probably would have been up in the leading group in the road race as well, right? Because he had a touch of wheels, which took him out of that lead group. But I mean, I think he was naturally disappointed not to be there at the finish, honestly speaking. And maybe he could have contested that sprint given that his current form. With everything I'd seen with Matt Bostock on the Tour Series, I thought, yeah, he's really got the form. He's really there at the moment. Really on point, and I couldn't see. I think you'd had to kind of really work hard to not have Matt Bostock winning that particular Criterium national title. Good on him. I'm glad to see that. And he's a very likeable lad when you see him in the interviews and stuff. He's a really, really nice chap. And you think, yeah, you know what? I want you to do well. And I really hope that this might be a springboard for him to perhaps go further in the sport.
Yeah, I think you're right to reference that road race performance too. If he hadn't overlapped the wheel in front of him, he might have been there at the death. And how would that have played out? All right, Mark Cavendish is arguably the greatest sprinter of all time. You wouldn't really back anybody to out-sprint Cavendish, but you got to think Bostock would have been in there, wouldn't you? I mean, he's a really rapid rider. You know, coming back to that men's crit race as well, Sam Watson, how many people do you see look supremely elegant in a crit race, which is full gas from the gun, and yet he just looked like the World Tour star in waiting, didn't he? His progress seemed absolutely effortless. He was cool enough to hang back off Bostock during those numerous attacks from Josh Tarling. He didn't chase Tarling down once. He just sat on Bostock's wheel and said, all right, pal, well, if you want this jersey, you go and chase this guy down. And, of course, was then in a position to contest the sprint with Bostock. So Sam Watson in the road race and in the crit race, to me, was just an absolute revelation. I know he wasn't a secret, but wow, what a major talent.
Without a doubt, and Rainer funded. And I think it's important to mention that too, that actually there's a number of riders that we saw in the female and the male nationals this weekend, Rainer funded. So big hat tip to the Rainer Foundation. But I think Sam Watson, you just looked at him and just thought, wow, yeah, he looks like he's got everything here. And genuinely disappointed not to take the senior title. You know, I thought he positioned himself well, and you know, he looked quite disappointed, although he took obviously the under-23 jersey as well. But yeah, really, what a talent he is, for sure. I think we're going to be seeing and hearing a lot more of him.
Broadening that out then to the current state of the domestic road scene, just how strong are the riders that we see in the National Road Series week in, week out, and how far off their World Tour counterparts are they? Daisy, there's nobody better to ask than you about that.
I think it's hard, isn't it? Like, obviously, you've got your World Tour, and it shows, doesn't it, in the nationals, especially in the women's, because you've kind of got that World Tour group off the front. Whereas I think in the men's, it's a lot closer, and they sort of mix around a lot more. So I definitely think the gap in men's is smaller than the gap in women's. But then, you know, you've only got to look to like the likes like Becky Story, who from the women's tour, she was mixing it with the World Tour Pros. There's some one-offs, isn't there? I think Becky's definitely a bit of a one-off. I think there's definitely some domestic riders and you think, oh, they're really close. Like, look at Leah on the podium in the time trial. So yeah, there's some, I think, that are really close. But then I think the much bigger range of ability in women in comparison to men. It's exciting.
How would you rate the strength of British women's road racing at the moment across the two divisions, the World Tour and the domestic scene? I would say coming away from that national championships, it looks really, really healthy.
Oh, really strong. I think year on year, it's stronger. I think even just looking at the tour series this year compared to last, I know last year it was a bit different. We just had three rounds, but I think it stepped up again. I think every year it's getting stronger, it's getting harder. You work harder for your results every single year, I think. So yeah, it's definitely really strong.
Ian, you'd be well placed to answer that question too.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you're going to try and make a comparison with the men's and the women's, of course, the men's racing scene has been much longer established with its team dynamics and stuff like that. So the gap may be look smaller in that. But in the women's, it's growing exponentially, absolutely exponentially. You know, I've been doing management in women's teams or club and team for 6 years now, and we've gone right from having regional race looking to get 10 riders to getting full fields of 50, 60 riders in them week in, week out. And in the national series, just still getting the bigger fields, but they were much more polarised a couple of years ago, like Daisy said. But now it's closer together, you know. Really impressed at the weekend, like say, how that field stayed together for so long before, like I said, the usual suspect that you'd imagine to break away. We were at Otley last night and it was a big bunch sprint. You know, there was still 50 riders left in that bunch sprint, and it was a fast race, you know. So the strength and depth is getting bigger and bigger each year. And the more that you do race against like professionals like you did at the weekend, Daisy, and other things, you've got that touching distance now. You can see them. They're not a million miles away, you know. Yeah. You're there. And that's what I try and instill into my riders, you know. The difference between that and you is very slim, you know, it's tiny, you know. We're seeing it this year, but moving forward to next year and coming years, our domestic scene is going to grow and your professional teams are going to be picking our riders for those, you know.
So Daisy, you were in that position then, so let me ask you then. So you're suddenly on the start line with World Tour riders. So what's going through your mind? Is that a daunting thing, or do you just think, you know what, I'm as good and I'm going to kind of give it my best? So you tell us what's going through your mind.
I think there's got to be a part of you, you've kind of, with cycling, you've got to be confident and you've got to sort of believe in yourself. And if you don't, there's no point being there, because otherwise, like, you can't win if you don't believe you can win. So kind of once I'm on the start line, you sort of have to forget who else is there. You can only race your race, really. And, you know, if you feel good and you want to follow the move, or you might miss the move, you never know. Like the bunch, like you said, like it's so big, you've got 100 people, you know, something can go and you can be in the middle of the pack. You can't even get out to go with it. So then you're like, right, well, how am I going to get around this? I think on the start line, you've got to put everything else out. You can't control that. But then, like I said, you know, there are a few times I'm in the bunch and I sort of, you see one of the World Tour pros, but it's almost like a confidence boost because you are next to them and you think, well, that's good. Like if I'm in a bunch and I'm next to one of these pro riders from World Tour, I'm in the right place because they're here. So that's fine. And it's a bit, it does give you a bit of confidence. But you definitely do have to sort of put that to the back of your mind. And even, you know, the National Road Series, where they're not going to be there, they're still, like, so strong. Like, there's some really, really strong riders. But at the end of the day, you can only do what you can do. So they got to sort of put one side.
And the other encouraging thing, Tim, you very kindly were announcing earlier of all the riders that were now on these World Tour teams that have come through the domestic scene fundamentally, and teams that we've actually sponsored and given money to in the past. And that's really fantastic. And I think it just goes to demonstrate the importance of having that sort of development pathway and actually not making the steps too big. And that's sort of the other, I guess, thing in the future. Maybe the men's, there's smaller incremental steps, I guess, perhaps from domestic racing to the World Tour. And how do we make sure that women have that same opportunity? The steps aren't so great. You know, you can go to the next step, to the next step. Whereas at the moment, to go to World Tour seems a big step.
Mm. I think there's big steps, though, in women's cycling from the bottom to the top, not even just from domestic to the very top. Because, you know, I remember when I first started and all I did, you know, you do like your local crits and your local crits are nothing on tour series, you know, they're not even comparable. And then you've got sort of your regional 3-4 road races. And again, like, they're not even comparable to your national series. Because I remember my very first, like, I went to Rydell, like, nobody told me that was a bad one to start with, okay? nobody said, oh, maybe not start with that one. And I just thought, you know what, like, I'll just go and give it a go. And kind of got there and I got such a shock because all of a sudden you're on, like, closed roads, you're on the full road, there's like barriers everywhere, you've got the British side, there's so many cars, like nobody warned me of any of this, right? So I sort of rocked up thinking, well, it's just like a normal weekend road race, and all of a sudden it's not, and you sort of make that jump and don't, you almost don't even realize you sort of made the jump, it just happens. But it's it's huge. And then obviously, again, you've got from like your national series to sort of, obviously you've been abroad, Ian, and done some of like the UCI races and stuff. And like, that jumps big again. And I think nobody prepares you for it. I think you kind of got to throw yourself into the deep end, and eventually you get used to it. And now it feels a bit weird, and you go back to roads where they're not closed and you've not got the convoy, and that feels weird. But no, like, you can't really prepare yourself for those jumps.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Having an international program, you know, you do some races. You were in Portugal, weren't you, recently with the team? And, you know, to back to your point there, Daisy, just having that ability to kind of make that step up now from, you know, the National Road Racing Series to go race in Portugal, to discover a different style of racing, you know, on the continent, is as an important part of a rider development. If you want to kind of go all the way, you're going to need to sort of be able to display this competency across the board, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Opportunities, they've got to sort of come up, and you've got to sort of take them, even if you're not 100% confident that it's going to work out. If you don't try, you'll never be able to get used to it, but the jumps are huge.
I just wanted to ask an absolutely fundamental question about women's cycling, and there's never been a better time to ask it, literally, because I'm sat here with Daisy and I'm sat here with Ian, who's done more. I know you're very modest about this, but you've pretty much created women's racing in London. With the fundamental basic question, how has cycling, bike racing, become an option for young female athletes? It's incredible how quickly that's happened. Daisy, what is it now about cycling, about bike racing, that is a viable option for a young female athlete?
I feel like I've kind of grown with it, if that makes sense. Sort of like when I started, it kind of was on the sort of growth pattern that you've described. And I've been like kind of lucky with the sort of timings that I've had. But I think as well, it's like, you know, Tour Series this year, like everything that the men get, we're getting. And like, we're getting like Lancaster, yeah, which like, you know, is normally just for the men. And I think there's so many teams as well, you know, we're not even really short of places for women to ride. So I think the opportunities are a lot bigger. Also one of those sports, isn't it, where it's the time and the effort you put in, and you kind of get, you reap rewards from that. Almost the access to the sport is getting easier and easier.
But does it seem, I might have this wrong, but I know, for example, Molly Patch came from triathlon. I know that Becky Story came from triathlon. Did you do triathlon?
I ran a bit, yeah. So I came kind of from running to cycling.
And has there been a fundamental change where 5 or 6 years ago, as a young female athlete, you might have thought, well, triathlon is for me and road cycling isn't?
Everyone went, you know what? Cycling without socks just isn't for me.
Well, I knew we'd get to the truth of the exponential growth
That's
of women's cycling.
Yeah.
And we've got that. Ian, where do you stand on socks in
I'm with Daisy, yeah, socks all the way, yeah.
I mean, you've created that scene. Is it merely a question of build it and they will come? Or is there a more fundamental shift that young female athletes think, you know what, I'm not going to be a triathlete, I'm not going to be a runner, I'm not going to be a swimmer. All of those sports have something for me, but cycling doesn't. That seems to have gone.
Yeah, I think it is a big question. And I think a couple of things with it is, like, I'm a cycling child of the 80s and 90s, and there was very, very few women racing at that time. It was never questioned, really, I don't think it was ever questioned, really, Tony, was it? You know, why was it? It's just don't want to ride a bike, that's all right, you know, and feel a little bit bad about that, but that's the way it was. And then there was this shift over in the 2000s, and certainly from starting with the Olympics and the funding and stuff. So it'd be interesting to know how everyone gets into cycling, but don't know, Tony, as well, but you only ever got into it then in those days because you knew someone who did it. You know, with me, it was my dad. So it was either your dad or your brother or your mate or someone who rode a bike. You wouldn't just wake up one day and say, do you know, I fancy being a cyclist, you know, because it was never on the telly. It was never, you know.
It's funny you mentioned the Olympics, actually. That's kind of, I think, my first, not like my first memory of cycling. Obviously, I learned to ride a bike as a kid, but competitive cycling, like the 2012 sort of London Olympics, when cycling was like, the track cycling especially was massive, wasn't it? I think that was my first sort of like, oh, well, cycling, that's quite cool, isn't it? Like, that's fun. And that's sort of my first memory of sort of female competitive.
That got your interest?
Yeah, probably my interest. I didn't start cycling properly until a few years after that. But I think that was sort of, that's my original sort of thought. Like, that's my memory, yeah.
Yeah, because I saw it change from, it started in 2008, really. Is it 2008? The Beijing Olympics. Yeah. So that's when we first did well, and actually people thinking, oh, start riding a bike and stuff. But 2012, it went mad, and that's when I started my cycling club and started it all going there, because I could see lots of people starting to ride a bike, but they weren't getting into clubs. You know, they were just, you see all these people riding around on their own and stuff. And that's great. But I wanted to create a traditional club that we used to have in the Northwest growing up and didn't seem to have down there. So I've done that. But I think that's the main thing that's got more female people into it, is that because it's seen as a sport in its own right that it was never was before. You know, like, again, back in the day, no one would go from another sport into cycling necessarily, unless it was a runner with a bad knee, you know. But other than that, they wouldn't. And then all of a sudden, now triathletes and rowers and they're coming from all different sports and trying cycling and getting popular, you know. So, and the sport is changing because the sport was quite closed off, I think. Well, it's just a very male-dominated, believe it or not, macho sport. I can't believe it's this macho sport when I got ridiculed when younger for wearing lights and shaving my legs, you know what I mean? But it's this macho sport. But it is, and it's wrong, you know, and that's got to change, and it is changing. And a lot of effort's being put into it now by race organisers to put parity on with prize money and race distances and the encouragement. So the women are thought of more, you know what I mean? And they're rewarding everybody with that, with the good racing. And in my humble opinion, I think it's better racing. I think it's better racing because race distances are that little bit smaller, the more scrappy and attacky, the less predictable than the men's races. And that's what's getting your interest, Tim. You know what I mean? That's when you look and you think, oh, I see, yeah, who's going to win this race? It's not like Cavendish is going to win this race, or that's going to win. Who's going to win this race? We don't know.
The fan is the net beneficiary. I get two lots of great racing now, yeah. Whereas I used to get one. That's I know it's a very complex debate, women's cycling. But for me as a fan, as a journalist, that's where it begins and ends. More bang for my buck. I get twice as many great races. Bill, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I just wanted to maybe draw a different perspective to this as well, which is obviously I'm in the technology business. That's kind of where I've spent my whole career. And one thing you do when you run a big company and you're in a sort of certain industry is you're always what's called sort of landscape looking. You're looking forward, you're looking on the sides. And what you can't also miss is that sort of around about 2008 to 2010 was when suddenly the cloud exploded, iPhones exploded, social media, all of these things. So suddenly we had this major event in the 2012 Olympics. Then we suddenly had the mass market with an ability to interact with athletes individually. And then we had, you know, these amazing individuals, Dame Sarah Story, Dame Laura Kenny, at time Victoria Pendleton, all of these people, where suddenly personal brands were becoming a thing, and suddenly the way that we consume information was all changing. So all of that was happening in parallel, actually. And then at the same time, you have commercial sponsors, people like Brother, also taking the temperature of kind of what's happening in the world. Of course, things were all beginning to change. We're all becoming much more educated and generally aware of all sorts of things that are going on in society. And commercial sponsors like Brother, when we're thinking about this kind of making sure we've got gender equality, equal pay, all of these things, that was also coming along in parallel in the business environment. So in the business environment, what you're then saying is we want to replicate this, for example, if we're doing things in the commercial world. So therefore, if we're going out and investing, we also want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. So more what they call marketing dollars were then flowing into female sports of all kinds. So there was a sort of a number of different things happening in parallel, which have all been good, in my opinion, which have helped to accelerate to where we are now. So we're now at this lovely point where things are really in a good place, but I think I'd still like them to see to go further.
Yeah, I think we're a long way down what is probably still a very long road. I wanted to ask Daisy just very quickly, you know, Phil's talked about the structural and the wider kind of ecosystem in which the sport exists. Ian's talked about, you know, the regulatory side of that, parity in distances, parity in prize money, this, that, and the other. What about the cultural aspect? And I'll explain what I mean by that. You've got young male riders, you've got young female riders, you go training, presumably, with the guys, you see each other at races. That the most powerful, I guess, for riders of your generation and the guys as well, there's no difference. Well, Daisy rides a bike, of course she races a bike, she's a bike racer, you know. A guy just wouldn't blink, I would have thought. Someone like Sam Watson isn't going to be surprised to see you on a bike, whereas 20 years ago they might have been.
Yeah, I think it's weird because, like, when I was at uni in training, there was a few girls up there and we all sort of rode together. And then you come home, and obviously from Carlisle, there's not that many cyclists from Carlisle that are female. There's a few of us, and when we're at home, we'll all ride together. But then you go back out with the boys, and, like, none of them are sort of surprised. None of them are bothered at all. It's like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Like, it's just a Sunday ride, and nobody thinks anything of it. And there might only be one girl, or, you know, two of you or, and yeah, you don't even think about it. I know, like, for your local crit, the girls will do like the men's 3-4 and they, like, the men aren't like, oh, you can't do it. It's fine. No, like, nobody blinks at all.
And I wonder if that will be the most powerful factor, that it will just be part of the cycling culture that, of course, women race. You know, that's, you know, you need the regulatory stuff. You need the, as Phil says, the wider social sort of ecosystem. And I think, you know, digital media, again, something we totally take for granted, isn't it? Is that you access somebody's life on Instagram scrolling through. That just didn't exist even 10 years ago, did it?
Yes, there's a lot of pressure now on you know, the National Federation and, of course, on race organisers, people like Sweet Spot, to just make sure that everything that they're doing now, they constantly have this at the front of their mind of always asking that question of, well, we're doing this, but on the other side, we've just got to make sure that is the women's side of the sport, has that parity. Obviously, I know the guys at Sweet Spot well, and that's one thing I do know they do very, very well, is they just make sure that when they run the women's tour, that the facilities and everything, prize money, is bang on equal. And that's why the World Tour riders really enjoy coming to race that race.
They did a great job with the Tour Series this year as well. Sweet Spot, equal distances. They, again, you know, both races are now putting the women's races on as the main event, so it wasn't just the first event and the sideshow. So they're like at the forefront, so I found that was pretty good, yeah, so keep doing that.
Daisy, would you like the women's nationals road race to have been the same length of the men's?
I was also okay if they wanted to reduce the men's Tour Series to 45 minutes rather than increase the women's. Like, I was also okay doing it that way around. You know, when they said, oh, you know, it's going to be an hour for the women, everyone was like, oh, that's great, like gender equality. And I'm thinking, yes, that's an extra 15 minutes I have to suffer for.
Yeah.
So I'm okay, actually, as with the distances as they are. But then I guess if we'd ridden for longer on Sunday, we might have actually dried out eventually. So,
yeah. That nice bit of weather that came
That the men's race had. I was listening to a podcast recently and they were saying, you know, like the women aren't trained now at the minute, because with the way the cycling works now, to go and do like a 3-week stage race, because that's not what women have trained for, you know, whereas the men know that they're going to go and do the Tour de France and race for 3 weeks. You know, if they're wanting to start and make it more equal, it'll have to sort of be a bit more progressive, because you can't just suddenly say, right, well, the girls are doing 150 miles on Sunday, like they're going to race it. Because I think it'll completely change the race. You know, people are going to go, well, I've got 150 miles. I'm not going to do a breakaway from 1 meter 1, am I? So I think that's going to have to be a bit more progressive if that's the way it's going to go.
No, it's a very interesting point. I mean, when I talk about parity of race distances, I mean, closer to, I guess, you know, because I think in an ideal world, the women's would probably stay about the same and the men's come down, like you said, even in the bigger races, because it is what makes women's races in the World Tour good, because they're racing like 130, 140 kilometres and they're racing from the start. You know, if a race is 260 kilometres, there's going to be a procession for 4 hours, isn't there? You know, you may as well turn some stages on it 40 kilometres to go, because you're not going to see nothing before that. So it's pretty interesting what you said. Yeah, I think that's right.
Even if you just put the gender question to one side for a moment, you know, the men's sport has existed for much longer. And as a consequence, it's more professional. You know, there are embedded tactics, embedded roles. You kind of get to that stage, unfortunately, which some men's races have reached, where it's completely formulaic. Because that tactic is the most efficient tactic. 2012, we were talking about earlier, and Wiggins winning the tour. It was a really boring tour. We had a few like that, didn't we, with the Sky Train? Because that's the most efficient tactic. You burn off the rider one after the other until only the leaders are left. And one of the most exciting things about the Rog and Pog era is that Pogacar will race from anywhere, from any point in the race, won't he? We saw that at Strada Bianchi earlier this year. But just coming back, Daisy talking about the professionalism of the Tour Series and everything else, how does that help you, Ian? Stood at the gates of Regent's Park with a bunch of women who've never raced a bike in their lives and are just at the beginning of their journey into cycling, do these events like the Women's Tour break through at that level? Do they serve as an inspiration?
Yeah, I think definitely serves as an inspiration. Again, you've got to have a role model and a goal to look at it and see someone who is like you doing that. It's like I would say about any teams that I run, and certainly my LDL team, is that it's got to be aspirational. Not look at us, look how good we are, we're the best team in the country type thing. You know, it's got to be aspirational. And I've got riders in that team who 2 years ago turned up for the first time in Regent's Park, and, you know, and one of them 4 years ago turned up in trainers, you know, and that's the progression. And it's important for people to know that and see that progression's there. But then going on to, yeah, like you say, to watch the people in the Tour Series and the Women's Tour, then yeah, it is massively aspirational to them, because then they can see that it can be done. And there's women like them that are doing that job halfway there, whereas 10, 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't there. There just wasn't that pathway. But now there is, and it's very important.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're pretty modest about this, but you take novices who turn up at your sessions in Regent's Park and you turn some of them into elite athletes. I mean, that's really impressive. How quickly can you spot the riders that are going to become, you know, your next, you know, leading riders on Brother UK LDN?
Fairly early, I suppose. Yeah, you know, not everyone who turns up is going to have the attributes or the will or the want to do it, you know. So it's not just having the physical ability to do it, it's having mental ability and the actual focus and drive, you know, which not everybody has. So it's a case of spotting that and nurturing it, really, and pushing forward. So that's what I try and do. The main goal for me is that if someone's got that inkling and that notion, I just want to make sure that if they have got that idea, even just the idea that they want to do it and they want to try it, I want to give them every single stepping stone in the way to do it. And they might get to that level or this level or that level, but it doesn't matter whichever level they get to, they've done everything they can to do it and they've had the opportunity to do it, rather than not being told, no, you can't do it again, or you're not fast enough, or sure you're going to keep up, you know, and all them kind of things that they sometimes get when they turn up on other rides. So yeah, it's very important to have the pathway. I haven't got a magic wand. I'm not the greatest coach in the world. I'll never profess to be. I'm more of a motivator and guiding people to do it if they want to do it and push them as far as they can go.
Sparing your blushes. You know, I've spoken to your riders, things that just get dropped into the conversation that never make it onto the podcast or into the social media posts, but they all of them without exception say that you are able to bring the best from them, that you're able to connect with them on a personal level, to reassure them, to instill that confidence to perform. How do you go about that?
Don't know.
I think that comes from within. A leader is a guy that's there all the time. It just needs bringing out in him. Just like the competitive rider, it just needs bringing out of them. It's superb the way in our sport of cycling, you can see that.
Absolutely. While we're dealing with leadership, well, Phil, this is very much your specialist subject.
Yes, leading a large business, you get used to the idea of how to motivate people primarily, and you've got inspiration, you've got motivation, you've got intrinsic motivation, extrinsic motivation. Actually, what it really comes down to is, who is the individual and what do they want and how do we get the most from them? And that's one of the questions that I ask of everyone who joins Brother UK, is that they have a meet and greet with me. And in that sort of meet and greet, that's one of my default questions, is actually, how do we get the most from you as a person? You tell me. And every response is different. Some people, they want the applause and be on stages. Other people just want to quietly go about their work. And what I realize now, certainly amongst my sort of leadership team, I understand how to get the most from all of them. So with one individual, I know that if I need to say you've done a great job, the last thing that individual needs is to be on a stage. What they actually want is a quiet one-to-one, where I just go, you're brilliant and I literally can't do my job without you. Thank you so much. And that is enough. There are other people on my team that want to be on a stage with everybody clapping and whooping and saying how wonderful they are. And I remember when I read Mark Cavendish's book, you know, when he was talking about working with Steve Peters, the psychologist, and he pretty much didn't want to work with him because he just said, I know what makes me go. Just blow smoke up my arse. And that's in his book. And that's it. I don't need all of the dissection. I don't need, you know, hours and hours with a psychologist. Just literally tell me I'm brilliant. Keep me buzzing and you'll get the best performances. So I think when you're leading a team, as long as you understand that firstly, that as individuals, we are human beings motivated by different things. But then, of course, you have the difficulty of then a team dynamic when that team comes together. And obviously I've seen firsthand with people like Sherry Pridham, Adam Kenway rode with Sherry for Vitus. There's Sherry now up in the World Tour leading people. And so it doesn't really matter then whether you're male or female. It's about, how do I get the most from that other person? And then when you're leading larger organizations, slightly more complex, you then have to look at the fluid dynamics of then when those individuals interface with other individuals, which is what we then call culture. and how we get the best from a culture. So that's my view, is always see riders as individuals, and then you tend to get the most from those people.
What a panel we've got here today. We've got the leader of a major business, we've got the manager of a cycling team, we've got the former manager of the Team GB road team, and we've got an active rider. So we've got some pretty valuable insights. I'm just going to use that cue from Phil about Mark Cavendish, because we haven't discussed the men's road race at the National Championships at all, and that was arguably the best race of the weekend. What a sensational race. Tony, you were inside it, as we've already heard, but just stepping back as a fan, as a spectator, let's have a takeaway from each of you. For me, at least, it's that Mark Cavendish wasn't always the easiest individual to deal with, but who has achieved incredible amounts within our sport: a world championship, 34 Tour de France stage wins, a Monument Classic victory. Still, the British Championships means something to Mark Cavendish, and isn't that a wonderful takeaway? Ian, what was your big takeaway from the men's road race?
Well, one, it was race from start to finish, like a race should be. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about how sometimes it can be very predictable, and that was the very opposite of predictable. So that was really good. What I like the most is the way Mark Cavendish rode, to be honest with you, because he's pigeonholed, of course, as a sprinter, and he spends most of his time in bunches and getting led out the last few kilometres, and that's his job to do that, and he does that very, very well. And it's easy to think, well, that's just a sprinter. And I know from my coaching and managing point of view, when I've got a tell of a riders how to ride, and they try and pigeonhole themselves into things, and to watch him ride like that, that's when you say, well, no, he's a brilliant bike rider. He's not just a sprinter, he's a brilliant bike rider, and he's very, very clever. He marks every move, he made a few moves and won the race. So I think it was fantastic. You already mentioned Sam Watson. I mean, what a find, you know. I mean, incredible riding, such mature riding and clever riding. And then you see him on the podium, he looked 12, didn't he? And in all respect, though, you know, he's only your own rider. He's going to be an absolute superstar. So there's some real revelations in the race. So, yeah, I thought it was an amazing race for all those reasons.
Daisy, you probably would have been drying out still while the men's race was on. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it and form any conclusions.
It's nice to see, isn't it? He just purely loves it, and he's there. He's not like, oh, I'm a bit sick of it now, or it was better back in the good old days or anything like that. He just purely loves it, and it's so good to see.
Phil, you mentioned earlier you watched every kilometre of both road races. What's your big takeaway from the men's race?
Very similar to Ian, actually. For me, I just thought what you saw was a world-class bike rider with intent, going out from the gun, going, I'm up for this today. And at times making moves, at times just moving behind and, again, saving a bit of energy. They tried so hard to get rid of Mark Cavendish, didn't they, in the race? They were trying so hard. They were ganging up on him and all sorts. But the class shone through, and it was 2013 when he last had those stripes on. And you can see, obviously, he's coming, I guess, towards the end of his career relative to where some of these younger riders are now. And he still had that hunger for that. He had the hunger to have those stripes on again. And I just thought that you could see that in every pedal stroke that he made during the race. It was generally fantastic. I also want to give a shout out to Alexander Richardson, because I thought he rode a spectacular race. Absolutely brilliant. And again, looked a bit disappointed, you know, at the end of it all, not to kind of get up there and maybe take the win. I think I thought he looked brilliant. And obviously, he's now signed for Saint-Piran, hasn't he? Obviously, he rode the race as a privateer on the day. So it'd be great to see him, you know, back on the National Road Series and showing his class. But there's so many bits and bobs in it all. Across the whole race, there was the various breakaways, the bits of intent, and Ineos trying to make it a bit difficult for everybody. But for me, the men's road race was just simply the sheer class of Mark Cavendish was the standout story of the day. I made that much noise when he went over the line. You know, I literally jumped off the sofa and was jumping around the front room, because I just thought that is going to mean everything to him. It's going to mean everything to him. And I really liked the magnanimous way that he went to all the other riders and, you know, congratulated them for their own performances, to the under-23s. You know, there's nice pictures of him with Sam Watson, you know, in their jerseys, all of these sorts of things. And I always like the fact that Cav stands at even the women's races and cheers everyone on. I mean, he's a true cycling fan, isn't he? He's a cycling fan, and I would really, really glad that he got the jersey that day. Genuinely, I am.
We all say that Cav is a sprinter. On that day, he put just as much into that break as anybody. He drove it, and he was talking to people, come on, you've got to come through. Nobody sat on, because Cav wouldn't let them do that. He was the same as a junior when he used to come over from the Isle of Man and ride on Waverley Playground in Liverpool. He was full of cycling. And he will always be a cyclist. He was out riding when the women's race was on. And you could see him at the side of the road. That's the guy. He loves cycling.
Tony, we already know that you finished fourth in the elite men's road race.
Yes.
I just wondered if you had a different takeaway. You saw the race from the inside. What will be your lasting memory of that race?
I mean, criticise them. I would say the three lads, including Cav, lost it in the sprint. They let Cav not have it, but do his thing. They should have split and went either side of the road and made Cav either go up the middle or take one of them. And as it was, it's easy to criticise, isn't it, afterwards and say, this is what they should have done. Cav would have won anyway, I think, if he'd have done that. But they all put their best on that day. I'm sure they did.
Now, Tone, on that one, before we finish, normally neutral service would be taken off with a deviation, but you weren't on the Nationals. So what was going on there?
Because we were asked to continue because there was three riders there with a fourth, maybe a minute behind. If one of them had have had trouble, at least we were there. That's what Dave Menzies, who was the, he said, you go through to the finishing line. Normally we go into deviation, but fair play to him. He'd seen what was going on and possibly that could have been the loss of a podium place if one of them had punctured. Most probably he would have rode across the line, but there was another guy coming up
fast. And here's me thinking you just had selective deafness to make sure that the brother logo could be seen by all the viewers, yes, and then over your role. No, when I saw that, I thought, that's really strange, but that sort of makes sense now that effectively you were just there to the final metres, even if you needed to just get a bike off the roof or if there was a crash or whatever, that somebody would still cross the line and earn their podium place. That was the rationale from the commissaire.
It's a shame you didn't quite make it onto the podium.
Yeah, no, Tony. It's,
Tony, I'm sorry.
It's the medal that never was.
Yeah.
We couldn't go any faster.
Since we were last speaking, we've been joined by another guest, by Adam Kenway, a Brother UK-sponsored athlete, former British hill climb champion, has residential rights, I think, on the podium at the National Hill Climb Championships. He's won so many medals. And Adam, you're sort of picking up on that thread. We were talking about Mark Cavendish. And of course, while, you know, we watch Cavendish as fans, you've actually competed against him. What sort of competitor is he?
Oh, he's furious. That's it, really is furious. First time I raced with him was, I think, 2016, acting the National Road Race Champs, and I was a real underdog at that point. And I think we were going across the main break at one point, and I was kind of trying to get him to give me a turn, but he wouldn't have any of it, and he told me where to go, really. And then about 3 minutes later, attacked me and got across from his own and got me in the middle of nowhere, so I was in no man's land. But then a couple of years later, it was Tour of Yorkshire, and I think it started in Richmond, and it was a beautiful day, amazing day. And I had a good day the day before, so I was on a bit of a high, and there was like crowds everywhere, and I was on the front with Cav on the start line, and we started chatting away, and he said, oh, how amazing is this? And it was like a real joy to talk to. And I can remember a bit of a team meeting beforehand. We said, okay, there's no climbs in the first 10-15 minutes. It's kind of the first climb, Sutton Bank. So team meeting was said, Adam, you're doing okay on GCA, so you don't do anything, just sit and chill. And then we were rolled out. I was thinking, Richmond, I know Richmond. I don't think there's a flat way out of Richmond. And I think it was actually neutralised zone, really, where the climb was. But obviously neutralised zones in races aren't really neutralised zones, and it's probably the hardest point of the race. And as soon as the car went, two riders went up the road, and Dimension Data, who Cav was riding for at the time, basically it was favourite for the sprint in Scarborough, and Scarborough's kind of the big sprint stage, and they didn't want a big breakaway, so two riders went, and I think they were happy with that. And I can remember I went, and Bernie Eisel pulled me back. It wasn't even an effort for him. And then I looked across and said, I really need to be in the break. I had Chez in the ear shouting out, like, okay, where go? Basically, he looked at Cav, and Cav just gave him the nod. And I went, he said, you can go, but you won't get across to him now. So I went, and I can remember being out there for about 5 minutes, and I could see the break, but it was, you know, like almost untouchable. In the back of my head, I thought, I just can't go back to the bunch. So luckily, it was a bit of a descent at the climb, and I got across, and it was one of the best days ever on the bike, really. The crowds were amazing. But unfortunately, we went up Sutton Bank nice and steady, and there was another climb which we weren't expecting to be as hard as it was, quite narrow. Got over the top of that, and then we heard on the radio, Cav's being dropped out of the bunch up the climb. BMC had hit the climb hard with Greg Van Halfmont at the time. So as soon as I heard that, I thought, that's the end of the break. Because BMC was drilling it to make sure Cav didn't get back on. And I think Greg did win the sprint in the ending. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, Adam, for that story alone. Your work here is done. Absolutely brilliant. We've covered so much ground already, and we haven't even talked about the National Road Series. So let's put that right. It's been a great series so far. We're still pretty early into it. We've had the Lincoln Grand Prix for men and women. The race in Lincoln was won on the men's side by Luke Lamperti of Trinity and by Becky Story, who we like to think of as our own Becky Story, came up from Brother UK on form. She won the women's race. And brilliantly, Daisy, your teammate Jessie Carriage was third. Where did that performance come from? She's a class act.
Jessie's lovely and she's really modest and she's really level-headed. And I remember we cropped like at the end, at the finish, and she just looked at me and she went, "I think I've come third." And I was like, "Have you?" And she was like, "Yeah, I've come third." And she was like, absolutely amazed. She was like, "I don't know how." But we were all like, "Jessie, like, you trained so hard." And I'd actually had a chat with her like a few days previous, like for social media, and sort of was like, "How's it going?" Like, and she was like, "Yeah, I've never done Lincoln. Like, I've not looked at the course, but I've been doing a lot of 1 minute efforts. So I'm assuming the climb's about a minute long." And at the end, she was like, "Oh, those 1 minute efforts have really paid off." She's really strong.
Well, modesty obviously prevents you from saying that she is one third of the British women's team time trial champions. You are another third, and so is Laura Pittard. That's the second British title this year, I think, for Brother UK Orientation Marketing. Olympic Academy trio and Ellen Bennett won on the track the senior women's team pursuit title back in March, and you, Laura Pittard, and Jessie Carriage won the British women's team time trial championship last month, I think.
Yeah, it was really good, actually. Well, Jessie and I hadn't done a team time trial before. It was really fun. We rode really hard. I think you get a bit more out of yourself when you've got sort of on the front, you think this is really sore, but you know, you've got two people behind you, you've got to just keep going and you've got to put your head down and get on with it. And I think we all found that. We all found like a little bit extra that day. So that was really good fun. And yeah, they're really, really good girls to ride with, actually. Yeah. And obviously the Olympic trio are doing really well as well. Grace List has actually just got a Commonwealth Games section. So that's good.
Let's get back to the National Road Series Cycle Classic. As we've mentioned, the women's race was won by Josie Nelson of Co-op High Tech Products, who last weekend added the National Criterium title to Palmarese. Slight anomaly between the men's and the women's National Road Series this year. The men's Cycle Classic, of course, is a UCI race rather than a national race. And that was won back in April by Finn Crockett, Ribble Welltight. The rounds remaining of the National Road Series are the Stockton Grand Prix on July the 3rd, the Lancaster Grand Prix on July the 17th, the Manx International, July the 22nd to the 24th, Rydale, your debut national road race, Daisy, on August the 21st, and it wraps up on September the 18th with the Beaumont Trophy. Ian, which of those races are you looking forward to the most?
It's really good that we've got two new rounds for the women this year. So it's the first time we've had equal rounds for men and women, which is a massive step forward. I think I'm looking forward to the new rounds, actually, and particularly the Isle of Man. I think that is going to be a great test. It's a stage race. I know the Isle of Man well because I used to race on there years ago myself when they had the Isle of Man Cycle Week and ran the TT course. So I'm really excited my riders are going to have the opportunity to ride on that because it's a great experience riding up the mountain because it's a proper mountain. So I think the Isle of Man one is one that certainly excites me the most and I think my riders will get the most out of.
Yeah, Tony, you've already supported a race this year on the Isle of Man and you'll be back again for the National Road Series event.
The junior one did not use the TT circuit. They have a circuits that are renowned for theirs. But the TT circuit is superb. If you think about it, the international years ago was three laps of that and it was a hard event that. But this year it will be just as hard and it's a stage race. It's the only one of the National Series that is a stage race. And the climb they've got down at Castletown is quite a hard one, just that on its own.
Bill, you're going to be there the whole weekend, I think.
Yes, I am. I went last time they did the Isle of Man 3-day and really thoroughly enjoyed it. I like the mix of the different styles of having the hill climb and then the, you know, the crit as well as the road race. And I really liked the blend of all of that. It was really brilliant. And I can remember running alongside Ed Clancy on the hill climb. Obviously, Ed wasn't renowned for his hill climb. He's the first to tell you that. Literally, I waited. I was probably one of the only people on the mountain at the top because I was staying at a friend of mine's at the time. And running alongside Ed, like one of those lunatic sort of Tour de France fans and going, "Come on, Ed, come on, Ed." And he went on to win the crit, didn't he, that time round?
Fantastic. Ian, we talk a lot on this podcast about, you know, the National Road Series and its suitability for developing riders for professional careers. Where do you stand on that? Is it a good training ground? Does it compare to, you know, the Olympic Academy route, for example?
Absolutely so, yeah. I mean, it gives us a good grounding of pacing the big bunches. And yeah, the quality of riding is fantastic, you know. And then we go abroad and we can take that confidence with us when we go into those races, and the riders do perform because of it. But without that racing here, it'd be a different story. We went over there having just ridden a few crits. We wouldn't be in the same boat, you know. We have been pushed and we have been challenged. And that helps us when we go to the bigger races abroad, yeah.
Yeah. We talked earlier, Daisy, didn't we, about women cycling and how domestic racing can be attractive to a young athlete like yourself. And we kind of framed that within the tour series, the Women's Tour. How inspiring, how motivational is the chance to ride in the National Road Series?
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, knowing that it is such a high level and the strength and depth that Ian's talked about. And I think knowing that in the UK, that is sort of best of the best. And even sort of being there, being on the start line, like finishing a National Road Series, I think is an achievement in itself. And people don't really recognise that, because if you're too far behind, you're not even finishing. I remember when I went to Rydale, you know, scarred. But I remember them saying to me, look, like, even if you just finish, like, that is an achievement. It is like inspiring and like aspirational, because just like even being there and being able to get round is being.
Yeah, Tony, your experience in this sport is absolutely vast, and you will have seen the various, you know, it's called the Star Trophy, I think, at some point, the Premier Calendar.
Perno, Star Trophy.
Really?
Yes. Really? Yeah, when I rode the Perno Classics.
Did you get a bottle if you won?
No.
Oh,
no.
It's disappointing, isn't it?
How does the modern National Road Series measure up to what's gone before?
It's harder now, because you've got the depth of riders now that make a difference, whereas years ago, you'd maybe have 10 out of a group of 60, 70 riders were winners. Now I think there's 50% there can win a race. It's definitely harder now than what it was. Some of the older guys will disagree with me with that. You'd speak to Sid and other people like that. The competition is there now, which is what we need. And really? That's why we've got the riders we've got doing so well in World Tours.
Interesting to hear. And how about you, Phil, brother? Has been at the heart of the National Road Series for as long as brother has been in cycling, which is, you know, over 10 years now. How does it provide return on investment for brother? What's brother's goal in being involved in that top tier domestic series?
Well, I think where we decided we wanted to slot in with this was sort of very much about being that partner that understood the scene well. And I always sort of said, we just got to do the smart stuff that other brands might not do. So we've got to do, for example, sponsorship of neutral service. I sort of started to learn the scene and understand how it all worked, and then figure out, well, okay, where could we make an impact here, rather than just sort of coming along with our huge brother logos, hanging them wherever we can and just saying, we're here, look at us, aren't we brilliant? But actually going, no, forget that. Smart sponsorship is about getting under the bonnet of a sport and really understanding its strength and depth. What you begin to then do is you earn your place to some degree. So what we realized was with the National Road Series, it's a vital component of developing riders, and also for teams to provide the platforms for the riders to race in this sort of very, very competitive race series fundamentally. So once we'd sort of understood and sort of started to move into cycling, we've said on podcasts before, we just sort of started with the neutral service, and then we kind of got into doing some work with Sweet Spot on the Women's Tour and the Men's Tour of Britain. And then we sort of accidentally sort of slipped into team sponsorship. And we haven't really looked back on that, honestly speaking. When I look back, and I found a folder the other day because I was actually just determining a contract for one of the teams that we sponsor. And I looked back and I saw all of my folders of all the various teams, some of whom are here now, some who are not here. And all the people that are now we can see in the sport, or we might have at some point just had a hand in providing a little bit of money to a team for that rider to kind of, you know, to do their thing, makes me realize that actually we've done quite a good job, I think. You know, I think I can pat myself on the back and go, we've done quite a good job here when you look at it. And when I've met with people who are in the sport, I'm always chuffed because they compliment us on how we've done it. They say, yeah, kind of everywhere I look, you always seem to be around. And we've achieved that probably at about a third of the cost that another brand, if you tried to replicate it and you didn't understand the sport, the people, the dynamics, the structure, all of these things, I think you'd probably, it would cost you three times as much to do it in the same way. But that's about getting under the bonnet, how you bolt component parts, which then become greater than the whole, which is ultimately what we've done. And obviously Adam, Daisy, You know, Adam, you work with Vitus. We try to kind of get to know the riders on the team. We try and just develop a relationship which is greater than just here comes the swinging checkbook. Everyone stand up straight and be nice to the sponsor. We just try and go a little bit deeper than that.
I think it's a lot more than that, isn't it? Brother has real credibility in this sport. Adam, what role has the National Road Series played in your career? We think of you as a hill climb specialist, rightly so, but you're also a breakaway specialist. You're also at the sharp end of domestic road races.
Yeah, the National Road Series, I did my first one in 2015. At that point, I'd already in the kind of, I think I won a medal at the National Hill Climbs and I was there or thereabouts at that scene. And then I was kind of road racing as well. And I can remember doing the first Prem, I think it was Chorley Grand Prix. And I can remember being there and there was Madison Genesis, JLT, Rally, who I signed for afterwards. And I can remember I couldn't take my hands off the handlebars for probably 130K. So I hadn't eaten, I hadn't touched my bottle just because it was that frantic. And because it's my first one, I just didn't want to miss anything. I didn't want to cause a crash. And I got to the end. I finished it. I was really chuffed to finish my first one. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do that again. I finished, but just finished. And then by the end of that year, I was kind of feeling feet kind of thing. And then I couldn't believe good winter's training, knowing what I had to do to actually get up there and actually compete a little bit in them races. The year on was, I kind of started by getting, I think the year after I was in the break at Chorley, which I can remember, first Premier Calendar, first break. I'm actually here. I'm looking around, I'm thinking, I've watched you on telly. I shouldn't really be here. And then it just kind of leads on. But these are some of the hardest races you'll ever do. Like Rydale, there's normally only 30 finishers.
Brilliant conversation. Thank you very much indeed, everybody, for joining us today. It's been wonderful to be back in the studio and we couldn't have hoped for a better panel. Thank you very much, everybody out there, for listening. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we're at Brother Cycling on all three channels. Thank you very much indeed for listening and do stay safe.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.